The following program contains views and opinions that do not necessarily reflect those of KMRE staff or of the Spark Museum of Electrical Invention.
It's Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contouris. With me tonight, Liz Darrow, Dave Willingham, Tim Johnson, and Edgar Franks. Coming up, the nation may be falling apart, but Washington State strengthens the blue wall, brick by brick, according to Senator Ranker. We're going to hear from Senator Ranker on carbon emissions and his actions to preserve education and the environment. Will Washington have a better budget this year? Dave's going to give us an update. And Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, wastes no time targeting local leader Marumora Viaponda for deportation. Liz Darrow was at the protest yesterday. But speaking of ICE, let's talk about ICE pulling what I'd like to call a Motel 6. And it's been reported by the Seattle Times that the Department of Licensing has been giving residents personal information to federal officials as many as 20 to 30 times per month. Dave, do you want to give us some background?
Sure. So late last week, the Seattle Times released a report that said that revealed all of this, that said that the Department of Licensing was not only were they revealing information without a court order to federal agents, they were collecting information that they really didn't need. And that's alarming because Washington's one of the states where if you are undocumented, you can get a driver's license and have a formal piece of identification. So what's shaken out since is on Monday, the Department of Licensing put out a press release listing off a series of steps they were going to take. They're going to use their emergency rulemaking power to stop this and are going to post new rules to their website. If you are interested, I highly recommend checking those out when they come because they need a bit of extra scrutiny right now. The deputy director who was in charge of overseeing their compliance with the governor's order on this has resigned. And, you know, this is, you know, alarming in general. It's also really bad because Governor Inslee's Executive Order 1701 was one of the best things he has done as governor. And basically, it lays out, it's not very long. I recommend you track it down and read it. It lays out a set of principles for all of the state agencies of Washington where it says they will not collect any information they don't need to do their job. If it's not federally mandated, state law mandated, or absolutely required, they don't ask you the question. They don't ask you about your immigration status if they don't have to. They don't, you know, ask about your income if they don't have to. And it was really, really disappointing to see that they'd been not living up to that.
So that was last year in February that Governor Inslee had that edict. And this is going directly against it. Director Pat Kohler said, according to the article, that the Department of Licensing failed to meet the governor's intent regarding the protection of this type of information, and then was quoted as saying, "We are sorry that our work did not align with our state's values." That seemed lukewarm to me at best. Anyone want to comment?
That was an alarming thing that came out in the news. You know, it's been a tough couple of years, you know, for immigrants and undocumented people. Even before the Obama administration when, you know, there were record numbers of deportation and, you know, the Dreamers came out of that, you know. It just kind of snowballed even more now that Trump is in office. You know, now we're seeing, you know, Motel 6 giving out information of its clients and people that are staying at Motel 6, handing them over to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. It's really troubling to see a state agency without even ICE asking for the information, just volunteering information. You know, and it's very troubling to see that immigrant communities are being targeted in such a manner. There's no other way to put it than, you know, it's when I look at it and all the stuff that's happened in my family and with all my friends, you know, it's a specific attack and racist attack towards towards immigrants, people that are undocumented, people that are here and have been here for a long time, contributing in many ways to our communities. You know, our kids go together with other kids. You know, we're part of this, the fabric of this community, and seeing an intentional undoing of that fabric, it's really troubling. Especially since the governor, you know, at this time when the Muslim ban was happening and, you know, people were being targeted, the governor came out with that strong edict of saying that we were not going to volunteer information to federal agents, promising that, you know, we put our trust in the governor to do the right thing. He tried to do the right thing, but the agency's not following suit. You know, and to bring it back to a local level, when we were working on the sanctuary, trying to make Bellingham a sanctuary city, you know, we presented an ordinance that we thought it was strong with accountability, you know, oversight. But what we got in response was something totally different that had no accountability, but it had a promise that Bellingham would not work with immigration and customs. But now we're seeing that even those promises have consequences if they're not followed through.
Absolutely. And Edgar Franks, a lot of people know about you as a local leader of civil rights movement and in favor of immigrants. And you also got the Sukuma Farms to unionize, mm-hmm. which was huge down in Skagit after a huge battle. Do you want to just take a minute and give people a little bit more background about who you are?
Yeah. So I come with community development. It's a local organization here in Bellingham. I was actually brought in here by Rosalinda Guillen. She's the one that recruited me. Actually, you know what? When I first got brought in, was to host a radio show that C2C was trying to do in 2012.
Yep.
And that's how I got started with C2C, started working on racial profiling campaigns. The thing happened in Sukuma Brothers Farms. I come from a farm worker family in Skagit County, and that's where I grew up. So farm worker issues are always the near and dear to me. And when this opportunity happened in Skagit County, where I grew up, where farm workers went out on strike and needed support, they reached out to us and started a series of events that are historic, not only for the for Washington, but for the U.S., where farm workers organized, boycotted one of the world's largest berry corporations, and eventually ended up signing a contract. And again, it's immigrants, people that don't speak English, don't even speak Spanish for the most part, the indigenous Mexican that were displaced from their homes, working in the fields here. And luckily, I was able to be a participant in that. So us and, you know, all the people that were out boycotting and not eating strawberries, blueberries, or raspberries for 3.5 years, and especially Driscoll's. Thanks to all the work everybody did and the sacrifices, workers in Skagit County now have a collective union contract that they're working under. And hopefully we can expand that all around Washington State.
And Liz Darrow, you can't see this, but Edgar is nodding a lot at Liz because Liz has been a longtime supporter of a lot of these issues and also has been our senior correspondent, if I can just hand that title out, in terms of reporting for this show on a lot of those issues as well. So I guess my question to both of you is, because it seems like there is a lot of rise of movements, of pro-immigrant movements, pro-equal rights, pro-Muslim movements, but Washington State seems especially strong, and maybe that's because I'm here, but it just seems like we're the leader, and partly because of people like you, that we are the leaders in the state. Does that mean that we have a better chance of making a difference when Motel 6 and the Department of Licensing is taking these actions?
Honestly, Stephanie, I think that's mostly perception, especially looking at Whatcom County. You know, the perception here is that we do really well. And I know, like Edgar mentioned, when the Sanctuary City Ordinance came up last February, it's hard to believe it's almost been a year that we've been asking them to revamp that and meet the needs of the affected communities. But one of the things that a lot of the council members would say was, you know, it's not happening here. And if it does happen here, you know, we want to be the first to know about it. Well, you know, when Maru held her action yesterday in Seattle in front of the the ICE headquarters, there wasn't any representation from the city or county council. And so it's up to us as citizens to contact them and say, okay, here's a specific example. It's not an anecdote. You know, a really strong leader in our community is being threatened with deportation. And we know that Jorge Garcia was just deported back to Haiti yesterday. And he's also a leader of immigrant rights. So it isn't coincidental. It isn't an accident. She didn't get pulled over. She didn't commit any crimes. It's specific targeting of a political leader because of, you know, the agitation that she has created and with the work that she does. So on the one hand, I think, yes, we're making traction. I think I see groups like Red Line Salish Sea and Northwest Detention Center Resistance and C2C making big waves. But also there's this wall of, we don't see it, it's not happening here, that creates a real challenge when it comes to changing policy on a local level.
So we are going to get into that because we posted it on our Facebook page and on Twitter, and we definitely wanted to alert people about what happened. It was described as an unprecedented and arbitrary act of retaliation that ICE chose to target Moru Villapando. And she's a leader of Northwest Detention Center Resistance, or NWDCR. And here's a couple of things she said was reported by the activist organization Mi Gente. Did I say that right? Close enough. And Maru, in speaking to this, said, I believe that ICE started deportation proceedings against me because they are not so much against my immigration status, but against my political work, as Liz just said. She also went on to say, ICE only knows about me because of my political work. I have spoken out to defend immigrants in detention, shared my story as an undocumented mother. I have sat in meetings with immigration officials and challenged their practices. They are an agency whose actions have already been devastating to my community. But with the letter they've delivered to my house, they are showing themselves to be an agency that silences any opposition to their practices. Tell me about yesterday.
Well, first of all, Maru is a friend and a mentor, and I care about her very much. And so it's difficult to see this happening to someone that I have been lucky to work with and learn from. But she'll be the first to say it's not just about her. You know, she's high profile, and so I think in a lot of ways this could bring attention to something that's been going on since at least 1991 in the Northwest. The detention center that we have in Tacoma is the largest of its kind, and it's largely operated under the radar until Northwest Detention Center Resistance started bringing attention to it. So yesterday there was an action, like I said, at the ICE headquarters. Maru spoke, Josefina spoke, a couple of other leaders spoke, and then we went down to the detention center and had a protest there. And while we were there, a young man from the inside called Maru. He's 19 years old. He has a work permit. There's no reason for him to be detained, and he just wanted to give some solidarity to her and let her know that on the inside they know what's happening and they support her. And so that kind of the work that Maru does has always been informed by the most affected people. So the people who are on the inside decide when to strike and how that's going to go down. And I think that's a really important part of the activism that she does. She's not just blindly making choices. She's working with the people, and she is one of the people in the community that's most affected. So ICE is not following rules, and it is known that they, at this point, they are on a witch hunt against political leaders across the country. So I think the time has passed for our local leadership to take a stand against that, but it sure has been crickets for the last 48 hours, you know, watching and waiting to find out if anyone's going to say, you know, I care about you as much as I would if you were my own mother. You know, that's the kind of passion that we need at this point, because it's pretty desperate, and it's not just going to be undocumented people. They're going to go after, you know, people who are nationals and other folks who are here legally, and that's already happening. So folks need to be aware of that, and I feel like they need to be speaking up loudly about that.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up about our local officials, because they did say, if this happens, we will act. And it's really easy to say that when you feel like you're just a little corner away from everything else. And I think that we all knew that this was going to happen, you know, and it's not just here. There are, you know, if you're activist, if you're visible, you're targeted these days. And this is a real opportunity to see some real leadership from our elected officials. And I hope that they will live up to their word.
Yeah, I don't think there was any coincidence or accident that the very first thing that Donald Trump did when he got into power was to put forward this immigration law and this travel ban and to because you know, the cynical side of us, we need a political enemy to go after. And some of these federal instruments are ways. There's a saying, Japanese have a saying that, you know, every nail that sticks up gets nailed down flat. And some of these federal law enforcement agencies with fairly loose mandates are able to go out and basically squelch political dissidents in a variety of forms. I think that, you know, for us in Whatcom County and in Skagit County, agriculture is such a huge part of our economy that I would hope that we're a little more cognizant about the importance of migrant farm labor, you know, people moving into a community, people having the ability to be mobile. We'd have some a deeper understanding of how critical that is to the economy and the working of it beyond the civil rights issues.
Mm-hmm. Just to, I think something that Liz brought up about Maru. You know, Maru has also been a mentor, you know, nurse ever since. I also got to C2C. All the great work that her organization has been doing, and her family, you know, Josefina also put her body down on the line when Trump came to Linden.
And tell people who Josefina is.
Josefina is, Josefina is Maru Mora's daughter, and she's a student here at Western.
And one of the Whatcom Three.
Whatcom Three.
And she was on the show. We interviewed her about that.
Yes.
She was one of the people who stood up to protest when Trump came to town. Yep.
And because of that, she got criminalized and had to do a misdemeanor. So she took that hit for the movement. And it's just been concerning to see all the... just like one day after another is like tomorrow it's going to be something else that the government is doing, and we're going to have to react to it. So it's really hard to organize. Despite all these things that are being thrown, especially right now at the immigrant community and at workers, despite all these things, to still be effective in organizing, Tacoma has to put a vote down if they're going to reapprove GEO, which runs the private detention center in Tacoma, whether they or not they're going to renew their business license. GEO is being under investigation for slave labor, for using the people that are detained for working for free, not just here in Washington, but in other states, I think in Colorado also.
GEO is one of the biggest private prison in the prison industry, right?
Yes, yes. And they were... I can't remember if Trump was going to try to appoint somebody from in the cabinet, or was just somebody else that just came up to mind. Regardless, GEO, big political player also in the private prison industry. A lot of that came out because of the work that Maru and Not One More and Mi Gente and the Northwest Detention Center Resistance. A lot of that came out of that work, early work, before there was the resistance. There was also... immigration raid that happened here in Bellingham, Washington with the Amato workers, and another instance where people in a laundry, industrial laundry, were also raided. Mm-hmm. A lot of those workers went out to Tacoma Detention Center, and so that's how people started finding out that there was actually a private detention center in Washington because of a raid that happened here in Bellingham. So I just wanted to uplift that work that a lot of these lawsuits and policies and, you know, exposing the private prison industrial complex has been directly because of the work that Maru and her daughter and a lot of the people in the front lines have been doing.
And I think that's one of the most amazing things about Maru's message, is that she's not going to hide out. She's not going to give up. You know, she's spoken very strongly that she's going to keep going. And even if she's detained and deported, she expects that the organizers that she's trained and has worked with will keep going, because, like I said before, it's not just about her. But, you know, I think if anyone can take on ICE and win, it's her. But she definitely needs our support and to fight fire with fire, if you will. But I mean, Edgar brings up a great point that Tacoma has a decision whether or not to renew with GEO. So there's a lot of things that we can do to agitate that don't require front lines activity. If that's not your thing, you know, you can make phone calls, you can write letters. And I would hate to see this be yet another situation of, you know, just looking away and shielding ourselves from something because it's uncomfortable. You know, Maru and Josefina are valuable members of our community, and it would be a huge, huge loss if she weren't allowed to live here anymore.
Absolutely. You're listening to Cascadia News Now, and our guest host tonight, Edgar Franks, and that was Liz Darrow.
Oh, no, I was going to say, of those Motel 6, I think Bellingham was one of the motels that was giving out the information to ICE as well. So, you know, if the city says it's trying to help with the immigrant community, like they stood silent, that Bellingham came out on the list of that Motel 6 is giving out information. So I'd just be curious to see what the position of the city would be regarding this business giving out private information.
So the movement, as often we all refer to it, and it's kind of a, for those who don't know, maybe a loose coalition of people from community to community, Redline Salish Sea, Bellingham Racial Justice Coalition, Black Lives Matter, Familias por la Justicia, and people who care very deeply about these issues. One thing that you have been doing is a weekly dignity vigil outside of City Hall, and has there been any talk about an action outside of Motel 6?
You know, I haven't heard anything about that. That's maybe a good idea. I think the City Hall vigils are intentionally placed to get answers from our representatives. And, you know, this week we stood in front of the Mount Baker Theater as the city celebrated Martin Luther King Jr. Day, obviously to bring attention to the fact that you can't really have the fanfare if you're not going to back it up with action 364 days the rest of the year. So I think that Keep Bellingham Families Working is the organization that puts those vigils together with C2C. And I think their intention is to just be present and remind the folks on city council that we haven't moved on, and we're not going to move on, and we're not going to go away. So that's an interesting question. I don't know about Motel 6 action.
Yeah, one of the interesting things I think is that the coalition is getting larger, because I know of a couple of events now where Jobs for Justice is getting involved, SEIU is getting involved, labor unions, because, you know, it's not just a matter of civil rights, but it's also worker rights as well. And, you know, ultimately we're all in it together. And so those are encouraging movements where it moves beyond, simply communities of color, and it begins to include everyone who is at risk in an environment where people are subject to, law enforcement and criminal proceedings because they have opinions that are not shared by the current administration.
Yeah, and that's a great point. You know, I think more people are realizing that having people living in the shadows doesn't benefit any of us. It's, you know, the only people that are getting anything from that are the people who profit by exploiting them politically or financially. And to bring this all together, that's part of what is so galling about the Motel 6 and especially the State Department of Licensing thing, is that we can gain so much by giving people a pathway out of the shadows, by letting them live in the open and call the police when they see or are the victim of a crime, and, you know, live like normal people. And it's hopefully catching on that's what we need to do.
Oh, I was just gonna say, yes, hopefully it does catch on, because I mean, it's something that we've been seeing time and time again, and we bring it up, especially with the racial profiling issues that we kept on bringing up, with the collaboration of like the Sheriff Department and Border Patrol and the 911 calls. Like a couple years ago, we brought up a complaint where the Border Patrol was listening into all the emergency calls that were coming into the sheriff, where it came to where people that had legitimate concerns needed help from the law enforcement. They would not call, not even like ambulances or anybody, because they thought that instead of getting help, they were gonna get their families broken apart. So it does help when people are out of the shadows, not living in this fear. You know, people want to take their kids to school, want to go shopping, want to do all the fun stuff, go to the park. People also want to participate when they feel that they're not being listened to. Sarabanan, you know, there was a big thing that happened at Sumas with H2A. You mentioned agriculture. One of our representatives, Doug Erickson, wants to like make protest illegal or certain kinds of protest illegal. So like what we're seeing is like these things are yes, they are happening all at once, and they're starting to affect they're chipping away little by little at all the rights that we have, the civil rights and the rights to protest. And and right now, the extreme cases are targeting immigrants.
Which exactly brings us right back to Mauro Villalpando and why she was targeted. And Liz, you started to talk about what we can do. And I think, boy, that really plays into Edgar's point that there are a lot of us who are not recent immigrants, shall we say, who are documented, so to speak. And I think that we have agency without being as threatened. I mean, we're all threatened, right? There's no doubt about that. But those of us who have the ability right now to act for and on behalf of people who would be targeted like Mauro, like it's even more important for us. So one of the things that's happening is there's a petition in honor of Mauro and to speak up for her. And we will post that again on Facebook and on our website, CascadiaNewsNow.com. Another thing, you talked about letters. I think the Sanctuary City thing is even more, if that's possible, even more important now with Absolutely. What's happening with Motel 6. There was a beautiful letter recently in the Cascadia Weekly about that. And so writing a letter is great. But there's also an opportunity, if you're listening to us on Wednesday night, there's an opportunity this weekend. Edgar, tell us about the People's Movement Assembly.
So the People's Movement Assembly is part of a process that we've been participating in for, oh gosh, like 3 or 4 years almost. This is a continuation of a popular democracy, participatory democracy that we practice at Community. Basically, the gist of it is where communities that are most impacted by issues get to lead and present the work that they've been doing and how people can plug into the work. People's Movement Assembly we held last year. It was called our inauguration. It was accompanied by a series of actions, one at the border called Unite Turtle Island that was hosted by Red Line Salish Sea. After that, we had a People's Movement Assembly that focused on four particular areas of work and movements that was happening here in Whatcom County. So it was like the indigenous rights. There was the food system. There was racial justice and the sanctuary city. Those were the four main areas of work. And the people that were leading some of those issues were presented. So farm workers talked about the food system, the people from Birchwood neighborhood. They talked about Albertsons leaving and the void and the food desert that is now created. There was a talk on the racial profiling and the stuff the Racial Justice Coalition is doing. And there's also the talk at that time it was a lot of the divestment and the solidarity with Standing Rock and indigenous people's rights and the fossil fuel economy. So that was part of the indigenous. The People's Movement Assembly, people talk about these issues, but not only talk about it and figure out the work, but figure out how the work intersects. So that's kind of one of the unique things about People's Movement Assemblies, where it's not a conference or where there's workshops and this and that. There's components to that, but there's also a plan of action about how all these different movements that seem disconnected but actually working in conjunction and solidarity with one another for a plan of action for social justice.
And I think it's very constituent focused, if I understand correctly, that people come representing different groups and really making that effort right. to hear each other. That's Sunday, January 21st from 9 to 5 at Bellingham High School. If you are listening on Sunday and it's 11, go over there anyway.
Yep.
If you are listening afterwards or listening to our archives, I think you can still get involved, yep. even if you have missed it, yes. with groups like Community, Red Line Salish Sea, and we will post those links again. But I feel like the People's Movement Assembly is really challenging not just the status quo, but the way we activate mm-hmm. and the way that we work together and challenging a lot of those systems as we're trying to resist the yeah. status quo. It says on the Facebook page that right now it's critical to come together to fight harder than ever because the survival of immigrant community members, indigenous community members, our freedoms, human rights, democracy, the health of women and children, and Mother Earth mm-hmm. are at stake. And I think that is beautifully written. So is it free?
Yep, it's free. And again, it's participatory. I think one of the organizations that has signed on and is going to present also is the Homes Now, Not Later folks that did the encampment in front of City Hall. They've signed up and they're going to be leading a session and talking about the organizing that they're doing. So yeah, it is free. It's participatory. So you can come in late. There's childcare. You can come and go as you want, but we encourage everybody to participate as much as they can.
Fantastic. Again, that is the People's Movement Assembly, January 21st at Bellingham High School. You are listening to KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham and 102.5 KAVZ Deming Van Zandt. And I just want to say we are honored to have guests and voices like Liz Darrow and Edgar Franks in the studio. And we are honored and lucky to have this space where something that's not mainstream media and voices that are not commercially supported are being supported, and you can hear them because you're listening right now. Mm-hmm. So I have to say, if you know anything about the station, you know that we are being asked to move and find a new space and become independent, and we need a little bit of money to do that. So please, if you care about hearing issues like this, and if you want us to keep bringing issues like this, go to savekmre.org. Even $5, like if everybody put in $5, then that's more powerful than just a couple people putting in $1,000, I think. So we are going to be talking coming up about the legislature and a person that has recently passed in Washington State. You may be wondering why the flags were at half mast. But first, I was lucky enough to talk to our state senator, Kevin Ranker, who I asked him if he was particularly excited to be a state senator this year and if it was different.
Somebody asked me last week what it feels like, and just spontaneously I said, I feel like the Dementors have left the room, and we've all realized there's light again and there's happiness again. So for anybody who's read any Harry Potter, they'll know that reference. But in reality, it is amazing down here to have a progressive agenda back in front of us, and one that reflects the voters' desires of Washington State. You know, a supermajority of Washingtonians believe in immigrants' rights and LGBTQ rights and pro-choice and protecting the environment and standing up for justice and social justice and things like the Voting Rights Act. And all of those things are now moving forward. Just in our first week in session down here in Olympia, Democrats introduced the Voting Rights Act, the Equal Pay Act, three different bills protecting and advancing women's reproductive choice, numerous bills protecting the environment, including a comprehensive package protecting the Salish Sea, and a handful of bills on climate action, including a full carbon tax, making polluters pay. And so the agenda across the board really reflects, I believe, Washington's values, and it's time for us to govern and not be obstinate.
You know, you started talking about LGBTQ rights and some social issues. Boy, we have faced some pretty difficult bills in the past couple of years, like the discriminatory bathroom bill. And it's really nice to see that some bills are being introduced the other way. I wanted to ask specifically, one of the bills you're priming is about LGBTQ elder care.
Yeah, I read a report 2 years ago now, and it was really sad that this bill didn't even get a hearing under the Republican majority. But I read a report that showed that some of the highest levels of discrimination against LGBTQ members of our communities are in elder care facilities. And it was just shocking to me. And so we started looking into it and working with staff and stakeholders and some of the folks who run these facilities and work at these facilities. We've come up with comprehensive legislation that requires training of all staff at these facilities so that they respect everybody with love and kindness and equality.
And that hopefully isn't too expensive of a bill. People will probably ask if that costs a lot of money, that training.
No, it does not. No, it does not. Training wouldn't be on the employee. The burden of the training and the cost of the training would not be on the employee. It's part of the provider's situation. And so it works out well. And I've worked it out with some of the owners.
So I know we're going to talk about some of the other issues that everybody always talks about with legislators, but I wanted to focus on a couple of other things that we don't hear as much about. The other thing I noticed that you're sponsoring is a bill about homeless college students.
Yeah, actually, I have several bills. So I am the new chair of higher education and workforce development. And in that role, when I decided to take on that committee chairmanship, I found myself in a place, and I love to challenge myself, and I love to continue to learn. And so it's a very exciting challenge for me to be a chair of a committee that I've not previously chaired, and not, while I've been passionate about higher education and workforce development, I have not been a lead on those issues. So I went to my staff and many others at different universities and CTCs and apprenticeship programs, and I started asking the question of, you know, what should we be looking at? But I also brought my passion to the table. And so several people in the last week have looked at all the bills I've been dropping, and they said, well, this is not your typical agenda. You know, where are you going? And what I said is affordability and access to college and to apprenticeships and to careers is my focus. And that means affordability and access for everyone. So a bunch of data was put in front of me showing that foster children and homeless children are far less likely to go to college. And when they do go to college, they are far less likely to finish. So I started looking at what are the obstacles and the barriers for these kids that are in place that are stopping them from going to college. And some of it was stuff that, you know, folks that have it don't necessarily think about it, but just a place to shower, a place to keep your stuff. It's really important. And so what I found with homeless children that I spoke to was that many of them, they would be embarrassed to go to school because they hadn't been able to take a shower in days. And they also, when they were in class, they didn't have a home where they could put the few items that they still have in their life. And so they were afraid they would be stolen or they would lose them. And so looking at lockers and showers for our homeless population so that when they go to school, they can feel good about themselves and they can focus on learning as opposed to focusing on whether or not their gear is going to be there when they get out. The other thing that came to my attention was this incredible program, Passport to College, which is set up for foster children. And it's a wraparound program that provides advice and services starting at the age of 16 years old, so when these kids are in high school, for foster kids. And we know data shows that this program really works. It's very successful. And kids that go through this program and have those support services are far more likely to go to college. And so in looking at that, I said, well, if this program is so great, why don't we expand it to homeless kids? And then in speaking to folks who run the program, they were saying that all of their data shows that if those wraparound services started earlier than 16, that they would be even more powerful. And so we're bringing the age down to 13, and we're expanding it to homeless kids. So now this program will be available to homeless children and foster children, and starting at age 13, which the data shows will be far more important. I took it a step further, recognizing that not all children go to college, and college isn't right for everybody. People learn in different ways, and we have some incredible apprenticeship programs around the state, and we're actually looking at expanding those using a model from Switzerland that's very, very successful, that brings business to the table and so on. And so what I started looking at is instead of it being Passport to College, let's make it Passport to Career. Let's make it a program that helps foster kids and homeless kids not just go to college, but maybe they want to go into an apprenticeship. And so really the goal is giving folks a career that they can be proud of, a stable income that they can be proud of. And so whether that's through apprenticeships or college, the program now, when this bill passes, and I hope that it will allow services, this incredible program, to be available for homeless kids and foster kids, and whether they go to an apprenticeship or for college, and starting at an earlier age, so that it will be even more successful.
I think one of the most innovative things, at least from what I'm hearing, is the challenging the maybe notion and trying to lead certain groups or certain classes of young people toward just a technical future and really kind of giving the choice back to them.
Yeah, I think it's important. It's really important. You know, as I said a moment ago, people learn in different ways. And if we think that college is the path for everybody, I think we're naive. It was an incredible opportunity for me and for many, but it's not the only opportunity. And
Absolutely.
There are incredible programs and jobs and really good jobs that you can secure through apprenticeship programs. And in the apprenticeship program, then you're being paid while you're learning the trade, which is also really important. Just making sure that all options are available for everybody and that we are motivated by kindness and respect and dignity, and that means that we are leading this effort with a motivation that says we will make sure that every single Washingtonian has access to the programs that make them a better person. The Student Loan Bill of Rights, to make sure that the crushing debt that our college students are leaving college with is not there in the future. DACA, making sure our dreamers have access to college and careers. And again, that goes back to all Washingtonians. I don't care where you were born or when you came here.
Yeah, I think this is a fantastic new direction for you, Senator. And
thank you.
You know, I know you're a dad. I know you've always cared about youth issues, but people still probably typecast you as the environment guy, and you haven't forgotten some environment bills. I know that you're working on reducing Atlantic salmon permits, and that's really powerful. But also, I saw something about orca captivity I wanted to ask you about.
I have a package of bills called the Salish Sea Protection Act, and those bills include, one, a vastly sweeping bill on oil spills protection and preparedness. And so that one is making sure that our marine waters, our Salish Sea, are protected from the massive amount of oil that's being transmitted across. And the second one is one, as you mentioned, that bans invasive net pen aquaculture of Atlantic salmon, which is a major threat to our ecosystem, and not just the escapements like we saw on Cypress Island this summer, but the day-in, day-out impact of these things is tremendous and detrimental to the future of our Salish Sea. Then I have another bill, which is a protection bill for orca whales specifically. And so that gets into, you know, we know that there's three impacts to our orca whales. One is toxins, two is lack of food, and three is the constant noise pollution and from boats just chasing them all day long. And we know that these animals, these magnificent creatures, they hunt and they communicate through echolocation. So this constant noise is really harmful to them. And so this bill would put a new enforcement vessel on the water full-time when those whales are present. Because we do know when you have blue lights on the water, just like on the street, people behave better and they obey the laws. And then it also looks at increasing our hatchery production as well as our wild salmon recovery. The last bill that you referred to is about captivity. And I've been working on this issue for years and was unable to get the bill out of the Senate under Republican control. I hope it moves now. And what this bill says is that facilities like SeaWorld, who have these orca whale in captivity, these orca whale that in the wild swim hundreds of miles in a day, and keeping them in a fish tank is disgusting, frankly. And now we know that SeaWorld San Diego is phasing out their program, which is a good thing. And that took a lot of pressure. California passed this bill a year ago. I worked with the sponsor down there. We both had the same bill a few years ago. And so now I'm bringing it back under Democratic control, and I hope that that will pass so that in the future, if anybody wants to keep a whale in captivity in Washington State, they will not be able to because it's against the law. Right now, none of our facilities are. So this is a precautionary principle bill, making sure that it doesn't happen in the future because this practice is so inhumane.
Well, thank you. I'm not going to even pretend to be objective about that. And I've been against SeaWorld for a couple decades, so I really appreciate it. Of course, the biggest buzz is about the carbon emissions movement from you and our governor as well. Do you want to just give us a quick explanation?
Yeah, definitely. So the governor's bill, so I have a bill that I've been working on for 9 years, actually.
Oh, man.
And so I went ahead and dropped that bill, recognizing that the governor was going to be dropping one within days of mine being dropped as well. And they are very similar, and plan on doing everything I can to move that bill forward as the vehicle to address climate change in Washington State. It's a comprehensive bill that raises about $1 billion a year. That money will go to areas to offset carbon emissions and to a greener and healthier future for our state. So looking at things like energy efficiency and electric vehicles and so on, but also recognizing that some communities are disproportionately impacted by climate change and by some of the solutions to climate change too. So making sure that those communities are respected and part of this legislation as well. And unlike years past, we now have some major businesses who are at the table standing shoulder to shoulder with Governor Inslee, myself, Senator Carlisle, and others who are moving this legislation. And those specifically are Puget Sound Energy and Microsoft and many others. And so we have some big players from the business world recognizing that it's time, actually it's past time, to take action on carbon.
Carbon emissions impact some communities more than others. Could a carbon emissions bill cost people who are lower class or in poverty more than it would cost other people? And are there any aspects of the bill that could work to help people?
Yes and yes. So yes, some of the solutions to addressing climate change can disproportionately impact some lower income communities. And so the bill is crafted in a very special way to make sure that those issues are addressed. So I'm very comfortable about how the bill positively impacts all of our communities and all Washingtonians.
That's fantastic. One last question. Some people are already complaining that this is another sin tax and Washington State has enough of those. How would you respond to that?
I would say that it is far past time that we take action on carbon. This is not a sin tax. This is the right thing to do. We also recognize that clean air and clean water and healthy forests are and healthy marine waters are things that are critical economic drivers to our state. So if our Salish Sea is dying, it represents billions of dollars in economic activity. We know that there are beetle infestations and other impactations, and we know that fire seasons are getting longer and more powerful due to climate change. So climate change does not create fire, but it does create the fire season that will be longer and more stressful to the ecosystem and more powerful and more impactful fires. And so all of these things are very clear indicators of why this is not about us putting some other tax on industry. This is about us having a clean and healthy and economically viable future. And it's absolutely critical that we take these steps. To not do so is unacceptable, absolutely unacceptable.
I know you're working very, very hard today on MLK Day as well as every other day. So I want to thank you so much for the time you took today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, and I look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
Our newly appointed Higher Education and Workforce Development Chair and State Senator Kevin Ranker spoke to us earlier this week. And speaking of fossil fuel and carbon emissions, I do want to direct you to Cascadia Weekly's Gristle this week for some background on everything Senator Ranker was just talking about, which leads us into our legislative update. Dave, take it away.
Oh my goodness. You forget after a while just how crazy legislative session is. Like a couple of months ago, maybe you were sitting around after a couple glasses of wine thinking, I'm going to sign up for the email newsletter of every legislator. And now you know you've made a mistake. It has been a really nuts week so far. It's not, you know, today isn't over yet. The Senate's going to reconvene 6:30 tonight to take up a voting rights package, and it's been kind of wild. The capital budget has made it out of committee in the Senate. That's the $4.2 billion construction repair budget for the state that was stalled last year after passing nearly unanimously in the House. It got held up in the Senate. Senate Ways and Means Committee has moved it forward. I want to give another plug to fiscal.wa.gov. You can see there a map of all of the projects. You can look here in Whatcom County, see, you know, Western is going to get a new access control security system. There's going to be a lot of roof repairs at BTC, a new learning center at Whatcom Community College, health and wellness center upgrades and the Lummi reservation. There's a lot of stuff. It's really neat to just be able to drill down and see where is this money going.
Or we can just wait for you to give us a summary.
Or I can just run through all of it right now.
You know, it's I think it's smart for the Democrats to try to get that done right away, because they will have, and probably legitimately so, bragging rights all year long about all of the jobs that this thing is going to create. And these jobs have been held up because of some hostage taking that happened last session. Get that out there. Get people working on highways, building things, doing stream restorations, and then you've got bragging rights all year. And so I think it's pretty smart. I mean, you know, just backing up a little bit, it's fun to listen to Kevin Ranker and how fired up he is. When you're a Democrat, I think, I don't mean this to be particularly negative sounding, probably come out this way, but when you're a Democrat, you go down to Olympia to get things done. You're not going down there to stop things from getting done. You actually have some ideas and some goals and some things you want to. And Kevin kind of personifies that, of somebody that is, now that he's got a little run room, and they might be able to accomplish a couple of things. He's very excited. He talks very fast. He's very passionate. And it's fun because it's exciting to do things rather than prevent things from happening.
Regardless of what party, I mean, particularly for the Democrats of Olympia, but regardless of what party you're in, it's got to have been a frustrating number of years where it was just stagnant, where everything was just stalled, and it's so refreshing to see some movement for our state.
Yeah, and just today, the House passed the Equal Pay Opportunity Act, which not only mandates equal pay across genders in Washington state, it specifically prohibits employers from being able to prevent employees from talking about their salary, which has been a huge sticking point where some employers can say, if you tell people how much we're paying you, we will fire you. And that's been a big impediment to getting equal pay. That's an accomplishment. That's a big thing. And we're seeing a lot of progress on really a lot of fronts, and it is exciting to see things finally getting done. They've brought back a couple of things from last session, like recognizing March 31st as Cesar Chavez Day, which, like Civil Liberties Remembrance Day, isn't a paid holiday, but it's nice to have the state commemorating that. A bill to have the Office of Financial Management conduct a study of prescription drug prices, which I'm really alarmed they aren't doing now, considering how much the state spends on that.
Yeah.
A bill to ban the have you been arrested or convicted of crime box until after, you know, employers would have to wait till after they've determined, is this person qualified before they can ask about convictions?
Because that doesn't, I mean, that prevents you from even being interviewed. It's just a way for people to take previous felons, anyone who's committed a crime, and just dump those applications into the trash.
Yeah, you look at the box, and if the box is checked, you throw it in the trash. You look at nothing else on that application.
Right. And, you know, there are exceptions for people who work with kids or people who work in sensitive positions. So it's not madness. But, yeah, if working an entry-level job, that sort of thing, a conviction shouldn't end your life. You should be able to move on. We talked about Kevin Ranker. Or Kevin Ranker talked about his, you know, pushing the Inslee's carbon tax bill. That has been moving somewhat faster than I had expected. You know, I think after last session, I thought that this would be percolating for a bit, but they've been having committee hearings. It's been moving along. Our own here in Whatcom County, our own Luann Van Werven has introduced a bill that would require higher education state colleges to report incidents to the governor and the higher education committees in the House and Senate anytime they interfere or react to a freedom of expression situation. And it doesn't really define that very well, but interesting to watch. I think this is in light of the, you know, chaos at Evergreen State College not that long ago, and a way to get colleges to make a list of things that people can then run against in their political campaigns. The biggest thing that keeps coming up on Twitter and Reddit, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention it, Carrie Condotta and Brian Blake, a Republican and a Democrat, have introduced a bill that would allow anyone who is 21 or over to have as many as 6 marijuana plants, no more than 6 per house, and up to 24 ounces of marijuana for private use. This is a big thing that the Marijuana Policy Project and NORML have been pushing one of the legalization states to pass. This is a big hurdle that those folks want to some state to test out for them.
So wait a minute. You can have marijuana now, but you can't have plants?
You cannot grow your own marijuana in Washington State. It has to come from a licensed grow operation.
Yeah, I think some of that has to do with the fact that Washington State was a trailblazer on the legalization issue, and so the people that put that forward were trying to be responsive to criticism and socially responsible, et cetera. Then when Oregon did theirs, Oregon has a stipulation in there that you can grow a small number of plants in your home. Washington State was ahead of the curve, and I think now they're going back and doing some backfill on mm-hmm. things that are reasonable. What I think is interesting about that story is that Washington State has done a number of things that I think are kind of far-reaching and they're kind of exciting, and they're exciting wherever you are on the political spectrum, because even if you're a Republican, you have to admit that there are new businesses and new revenues and new money coming in, new business owners coming in as a result of marijuana reform. And so it when the federal government steps in and says, we're going to crush that, I think there's some alarm, because this is a fledgling kind of enterprise in the state of Washington.
And I also just wanted to say, I saw Vincent Baez had a bill about food trucks, which was kind of surprising.
Yeah, so Vincent Baez introduced legislation that would exempt food trucks from some local and state rules that specify where food has to be prepared. In some areas in the state, if you want to sell food out of a truck, it has to be prepared elsewhere in a special kitchen. This would, if your truck meets certain standards, let you bypass those rules. And one more thing I want to cover before we move on. One of the big issues, this is an election year, one of the big things you're going to hear about for the rest of the year, I predict, is the Senate bill that just passed out of committee this week that would ban bump stocks in Washington State. This is going to be, we've already seen a bunch of money come in from the NRA. This is going to be a major political issue. So,
what's a bump stock?
A bump stock is a like a stock up the butt of a rifle that is specially modified to have a little rail. There's no spring because that would be regulated, that allows the gun, when it kicks back, to slide forward again. So with one hand, you can pull the gun forward against your trigger finger, shoot a lot of rounds at once, and the only real use case that I can imagine for it is shooting a bunch of bullets into a crowd of people.
Okay, and we'll pay attention to that in weeks to come. Dave, very, very briefly, why are our flags at half-mast?
They are to mark the passing of former Governor John Spellman, who passed away on the 15th. And I want to give a plug before I say anything else. On TVW, there's a special that aired on KVOS after the death of Booth Gardner, where they gathered some of the living governors of Washington State, and they had a conversation. And it's amazing, and you should watch it. And half of the governors in that room have now left us.
Wow.
Yeah, I would give a quick plug about Spellman. He's one of those old school Republicans that was very well-rounded in the way he approached his issues, and I miss that kind of Republican governor.
He was a great, thoughtful man, and you know, we're poorer for having lost him.
Absolutely. Thank you both for saying that. We are wrapping up rapidly. We always have more to talk about. Just very, very briefly, I want to say, hey, Cascadia Weekly is a nominee from the Sustainability Champion for Sustainable Connections for a Strong Community Award. So that's going to be held next week, Thursday, January 25th. We've talked about the People's Movement Assembly Sunday, January 21st at Bellingham High School, which is free and you should go. Also on January 20th, if you're listening on Wednesday, the Women's March for Unity, Equity, Justice, and Humanity will be starting at 10 a.m. on Lottie's Lottie Street. And that is it for our show. A humongous thank you to Edgar Franks and Liz Darrow for cluing us in on a lot of movement that is happening. I also urge you to listen to Community Voice noon on Saturday and Sundays at 8 and Thursdays at 7 a.m. This is Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contours. Our hosts tonight, Liz Darrow, Dave Willingham, Tim Johnson, Edgar Franks, and you are listening to KAVZ 102.5 in Deming, Van Zandt, and KMRE 102.3 FM in Bellingham.